Feeling pretty good about standing room only at 8:30. Okay, what I want to talk about today is really some of the challenges. How do you project the policy process onto our large census data sets or all the existing data sets? It turns out that some really obscure little rules in the policy side can produce dramatic changes in the policy estimates, in our statistical estimates. No disclosures. Okay, this is a theme that's been goes way back in the economics literature, the health policy literature. It's the underlying question of, so what happens if I expand eligibility for a public insurance program? So generally Medicaid, what's going to happen to the number of uninsured and the number of private? So I expand some public plan or new public plan. Is this going to cause privately insured individuals to drop out and go on to the public plan? There's also an employer equivalent that we rarely look at. Do private employers shift people onto the public plan? So maybe I'm going to contribute less to employee coverage, or I'm just going to cease offering that coverage. So why does this matter? In the end, let's say I wanted to cover 100,000 uninsured children. Well, if some of these were privately insured, that means what I budgeted for 100,000 kids is going to come in higher, because some of these are going to have private insurance. So whatever it is, it's not going to be what it would cost to cover those 100,000 uninsured kids. But from the academic side is we're going to see an entire new wave of these studies. When Medicaid expands in 2014, it's going to be different across different states, but we're going to see an entire new wave of these studies. People are still publishing on the SCHIP expansions from 1999. These are going to go on for another 10 years. So this is the classic way, the first group that did this. This came out in 96. People still use it, some variants, but they actually looked at the 1989 expansion for pregnant women and young children. So in this, it's a two-stage least squares model. In the first stage, you're predicting whether or not they're eligible, trying to deal with some policy endogeneity issues. And then the second stage, it's predicted eligibility instead of actual eligibility. One equation per outcome, so I have an uninsured, a Medicaid, a private, and the one that we're going to be most interested in are these duals, people with dual coverage. And so this two-stage least squares format. The ones that use this approach, these tend to be the higher crowd-out estimates. These can produce estimates anywhere from 22% crowd-out to 50% crowd-out. Where that matters is, let's say that 50% number. This is the one that comes up in policy circles all the time. 50% crowd out means for every one uninsured child that I insure, I'm going to have to insure one previously privately insured. So it's going to be twice as expensive. That's the way that one boils down. If I get down to a 33% crowd out, it's 1.5, so one uninsured, one half privately insured. 25%, it's only 1.33. So lower is better. The real problem, though, comes in with this dual coverage category. Not all data sets have this. Even within the census, it's going to vary how this is coded. In the American Community Survey, it only has that single insurance outcome, and you can only choose one thing. I'm privately insured, I have Medicaid, I have Medicare, I'm uninsured. It's only one option. But in the richer data sets, the current population survey we've used for a lot of this, we have source of coverage. You can list every different type of coverage you have. And this produces the duals. And in these expansions, we see a lot of action going on in dual coverage. And there are different questions of why, but how you code that is really going to influence the results you have. These models are very, very sensitive to how you treat this dual coverage. And so I don't know if you call it a measurement bias, but there's something going on there. And in this one, I'm going to talk about what we call the payer of last resort rule. Medicaid is the payer of last resort. And on a practical standpoint, what that means is generally we should imply, we should cool anybody who has dual private and Medicaid, those should be considered privately covered. That's not a Medicaid expansion. And this is why. Medicaid is the payer of last resort. If you have Medicaid, they will bill your private insurance first. They'll bill Medicare first. They are the payer of last resort. It's a straightforward thing, but this is very rarely done in the literature. And I'll admit, on my last paper that I published, I didn't do it. And so instead of criticizing someone else's paper, I'm going to use results from my own paper and show how much it... This case, it's already published. We can do that at this point. And so this is going to apply to private insurance. It applies to Medicare all the way through. In some studies, you see people reporting all three different crowd-out estimates. There are different ways to structure this. In the first case, you're just looking at the change of the uninsured divided by the change in Medicaid. So this is anything that does not reduce the uninsured is considered crowd-out. The second one they narrow down, well, I've got a typo, but second one they narrow down to just the change in private over the change in Medicaid. So we'll ignore everything else, just private. And the third, we'll try some sort of averaging. So all these three treat the duals slightly differently. And it produces very different estimates. And it turns out the magnitude of the estimate is very sensitive. Well, it seemed like the standard, let's just report all of them and be academically honest. But the problem is then when it's used in the policy environment. The policy brief is not going to give three different estimates. There will be one straightforward estimate. This is the number. They'll take it and they'll run. And so your errors, the measurement error, is really going to change the policymaking process. And even though in the academic literature, this is usually overlooked. So this is one of the regressions from my study. So the way these are interpreted, so in the first one model, it's going to be the uninsured, the Medicaid expansion for SCHIP, a 5% reduction in the uninsured, 5 percentage points. That's a pretty dramatic change. SCHIP was very successful at covering uninsured kids. You were going down from about 16% uninsured kids down to 11. That's a dramatic change. An 11 percentage point increase in Medicaid, a 4 percentage point reduction in any private, and then this 3 percentage point change in dual coverage. That's fairly large. And so how do we treat that? And everybody has treated it differently in the literature. And so with those three different crowd-out estimates, we get everything from a 58% crowd-out. So that's over every one uninsured child, I'm going to have to cover one previously privately insured. Another one, you're down around 38. The third, about 50. And so this is why we see frequently this 50% number. There are other problems with these estimates. What if we put in that payer of last resort? Does it change anything? So all this is on a functional basis is we'll replace private, Medicaid equals private if they have any private. Well, it turns out it doesn't affect uninsured. A rather large reduction in Medicaid, and then any private does not change. So on our estimates, we go from 58% down to 42%. Depending how you do it, that's a 30 to 50% change in your estimate. If you're only producing one of them, reporting that one estimate, that's a dramatic change. And that is millions of dollars. That's enough to sway a legislator. The other one, though, we can't say that it's all unequivocally down. If I'm relying on the second method, it actually goes up. And then the third one disappears because it included dual coverage. It collapses down to the second. So it's hard to sign what's going to happen. All we know is there is a bias there. And so if you include this simple little rule, it doesn't eliminate the problem of the sensitivity to the duals. It doesn't collapse down to the same estimate, but we get less differences between the two. It's less easy to cherry pick the two. It reduces the bias and sensitivity. But what's most important, though, is these little obscure policy rules can really change our estimates. So I'm not sure I've ever seen in the crowd-out literature this ever treated. And so as you go across these, and this is just one little rule, one of the other ones that we see frequently in the policy estimates is, let's say I have a Medicaid expansion in 2014. We'll go from 2013, one level eligibility, 2014, another. That's not the way policy works. The law passes, then you go into the regulatory phase, then the implementation phase, and it produces these very fuzzy estimates. But there's a rush in the academic literature to be the first one out with the estimates. Is that full implementation? How do you handle this fuzzy implementation barrier? And then it gets into the other problem of what is the end steady state result? A lot of our models just simply don't do that. In this model that we had here, if we ran it on the 2002 stopping, this is a 99 expansion. If I ran it stopping at about 2000, 2002, you get one set of results. If you allow for a larger time frame, you get a dramatically different answer. And so it turns out to what's the correct one. All the legislatures want is one number, 50%. And depending on what people's agendas are, you can get all these different estimates. And so this is, how do you take this very sloppy policy process and project it onto our nice, clean statistical data? Questions?
Yeah. So how does that payer of last resort actually work in practice?
Oh, it's sloppy too. It's a mess. So there are things called TPLs, third-party liability. There's a whole branch of Medicaid. Their job is to bill private insurance. It's very easy when you're dealing with Medicare because you can establish joint eligibility. But in private, they're always trying to figure out, do you have another source of coverage? And it gets down to a lot of when these people are responding, they have private, what are they actually doing? Because all of our insurance outcomes are 0-1. And very little insurance has become 0-1. Let's say you have a very high deductible insurance plan. If I'm Medicaid eligible, Medicaid will cover my deductibles up to that. And so that case, dual is appropriate. But it's just not sure. So that's what the third-party liability side of Medicaid is trying to sort that out. Because any money they can get back, they can use to insure other kids. It's all very fuzzy.
Yeah. Wondering, is there enough data across the time dimension to do like predictive exercises? Because it seems like this is a good sort of place you can maybe sort of, if it's a fuzzy implementation process, maybe putting some out-of-sample prediction or pretend out-of-sample prediction, some like recursive estimates might be helpful. Has anyone tried that?
Not that I've seen. Wait. Leighton Koo has done it for, I don't know if he published it in the academic literature or in, he was at Urban Institute in one of their formats, but he's done some predictive for, I believe it was 2014, but I didn't see it for SCHIP. The problem is down at the state level. We can do this for national, but Medicaid is a state program funded by the feds. And so all the states, they just want to know theirs. And to get state-level estimates for anything, California, Texas, that's easy. You can use the CPS. But when you start getting down to even Ohio, which is a good-sized state, enough data, it's only the American Community Survey, and it only starts at 08. We just didn't have the data until recently, and there's debate whether that's going to continue. And so the data does become a bit of an issue. Yes?
Are you familiar at all with the SHADAC?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. The other thing that SHADAC does that's really wonderful is they create the health insurance units because Medicaid eligibility is not on census families. It's on based on entirely different rules. And so that resolves, that's a whole other issue. But yeah, SHADAC does wonderful work.
Yeah, so one of the things that I ran into when I used their data most recently was that I think I ran into this very problem.
Very likely. Sometimes. The first thing they're concerned with, though, is what's often called the Medicaid undercount, is in our population surveys, people report much lower Medicaid coverage than our administrative roles do. So we're paying for this many kids say they have it because my card doesn't say Medicaid, it says Molina. And so maybe I'm private and we don't know. And so there are different logic edits they apply. So generally we're trying to boost the Medicaid numbers. But most likely if you get over 100%, that's it. Something going on with the duals. Was it with the CPS or which data source?
I think I was using CPS.
Yeah, most likely.
I was going back to 408. So.
Yeah. The advantage to the American Community Survey, by definition, you can't go over 100%. Response meaning our outcome variable or the...
Y variable.
The Y variable is just insurance status. It's four different equations. One, are you uninsured? 0, 1.
Right.
Any private? 0, 1. Medicaid? 0, 1. Dual? 0, 1. Four different equations.
So that seems odd that you would use least squares to estimate.
People use three-stage least squares, different things. You've seen it done all different ways.
Seems like a logistic regression model.
You could, but the sample sizes are so large, it just doesn't change anything. And back then, their key concern was what we call endogeneity, of the different levels of eligibility are not random. So in some states, it's more generous. And so that actually flipped the estimates 100%. You can go from positive to negative. And back when they started this, it was there once in a two-stage least square, an endogeneity instrumental variables model available for probits and logits. But you can run it with probit, and it just doesn't change anything.
The other point was you have one of the predictors is the outcome from the first stage.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are two. Well, actually, this is one. What do we call them? Instrumental variables models are one way to address measurement error, if you have a good instrument, which is a major problem. There are no good instruments, but theoretically, you can address it that way. The other criticisms of these, they produce just enormous standard errors because of that very reason. It only works for these large data sets. Anything smaller, it just goes into nothing. And that's one of the arguments why. The gentleman I mentioned, Leighton Koo, he just says, forget it. Just don't even use them. There's no... The standard errors are too broad to make anything intelligible out of them.
Go ahead. So who's more likely to be to have dual coverage, kid or an adult?
Yeah, these are only children.
Only children.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because in this time period, essentially, you had to have extremely low incomes to qualify as an adult. First, you had to have a child on Medicaid, and in some states, be below 2/3 of the poverty line. In Ohio, it's 90% of the poverty line. It's rarely above 100% of the poverty line. And you had to have a child. So childless adults, it simply wasn't there.
Okay.
And that's the big thing about the 2014 expansions, is now childless adults are eligible.
But you may also run into term dual eligible in the literature, Medicare, Medicaid.
Yes. That is the... Yes, that's the more common usage of it, I should say dual coverage, and the dual eligibles are the dual Medicare Medicaids, because that's of interest because it's such an expensive population.
I got one sort of, I guess, are you an economist? I'm an economist.
Originally, I was an economist.
Yeah, I don't mean to be rude, but a jackass economist question.
Are there any others?
There's a lot of reasons to believe that there's no equilibrium in the insurance market, with the cherry picking, and this goes back to work Stiglitz and Rothschild did way back in the 70s. So is it really appropriate to put a structural, when you do your one-liner, is it really appropriate to put a structural interpretation on these incomes? Like you're sort of implying that there's some sort of stable equilibrium that would exist in the private market. And whatever kind of reform, whether it's a public policy or not, is kind of nudging it in some direction, but you're really just chasing something that's falling apart anyway.
That's getting towards the steady state question. Does it boil down to a steady state? I'm skeptical, because some of the follow-on work we've done, there's a whole list of criticisms towards these models that I've developed in my mind that I'm just suspicious, but these are the ones our policymakers are using. And I'm just suspicious towards them.
Kind of random.
Yeah, but the problem is that's what our Medicaid expansions are based on these.
There is a big literature on sort of the theoretical and some empirical evidence that the health insurance insurance, or at least comprehensive health insurance, mm-hmm. death spiral.
Yeah.
And is there any merging of those two things?
No. This is very much to get at a very tight policy question. What this entire literature is. It's not atheoretical, but the policy drives the statistics rather than the theory driving the statistics. But I don't think there's a good theoretical literature based on the dynamics around this that at least makes it into the policy literature. Not that I've seen. It doesn't mean it's not out there, but I just haven't seen it. Okay.